It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. On this edition, DNR Forester Mark Vitosh joins Extension Horticulturist Richard Giron to answer your questions about trees and other plants that you want to grow or grow better. Is all the moisture we are having so far this growing season impacting the health of some trees in the landscape? We'll have the answer. Call in with your questions at 1-866-780-9100 or email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. From trees to weeds, Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa takes root just after the news. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. I'm Julie Englander. We're talking trees and other plants with Extension Horticulturist Richard Giron and Department of Natural Resources Forester Mark Vitosh. They'll take your questions about anything you want to grow or grow better. Call in at 1-866-780-9100. That's 1-866-780-9100. Or email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Hello, Richard and Mark. How are you today?
Great. Good morning.
Hello.
Hello. Well, let's first go to this needling question about all the moisture we've had having so far this growing season. Is it impacting the health of some trees in the landscape, Mark, and other plants as well, Richard, if you want to chime in there at some point?
I'll start with the trees and let Richard chime in.
Okay.
I'm actually starting to see some impacts already, and if you add in 2008 in the last couple of years, we've just had really pretty decent moisture at times. And those soils stay fairly saturated. And in the right conditions, if soils are a little heavier, a little more clay, tree roots are in the top, 6 to 24 inches. And those roots don't live very long anyway. There's a lot of rotation in them. But if those soils stay saturated, a lot of those little roots will die and can cause stress on trees. This year, I'm actually seeing some of the conifers, such as white pine, in some of my conservation plantings and even in yards in areas where maybe the soil is a little heavier. This last couple years with these heavily saturated soils, some of those trees are actually dying. And I know in years past, in 2008 and others, we even see some of the fruit cherries and other cherry trees sometimes sensitive to heavy soil. So the bottom line, there isn't much you can do about it, but you may see some problems if these things continue. Richard?
Well, as far as in the garden, you'll probably see a lot more disease, things like tomato blight, things like that, because of all the rain. These are soil-borne pathogens, and when it rains, the raindrops hit the ground, they splatter, and they splatter things onto the foliage, like spores, and they infect the foliage. And with all the rain, there's been ample opportunity. So we'll probably see a greater or more severe outbreak of certain diseases.
And we're seeing a lot of leaf diseases on trees, too. I was going more the lines of long-term stress related to water, but in the short term this summer, we've seen tons of different leaf diseases related to the heavy moisture.
Do you want to be careful, though? I mean, would one's ideal maybe want to go and take these trees and plants out of the garden or areas, do you want to be careful and not do that quickly, or do you want to get to them and get them out?
Well, if trees are, I mean, if it's just leaf diseases and stuff, Richard can talk about leaf diseases related to garden, but a lot of these leaf diseases on trees are just a year-to-year thing, so they're usually not systemic in the sense that there is an exception or two out there now, but in general, if you have leaf diseases this year on, let's say, we're starting to see, we saw a lot on white oaks this year and anthracnose. We may not see it next year. If we don't have the right moisture conditions at the right time, we may not see it. So that's not any reason to take trees down or anything like that. Okay. But if you have trees like pines or something that are wilting and you can tell they're dead, then at some point you'll need to take them out. If you leave them a while, if they die because of moisture conditions, you're not really causing any problems by not taking them out immediately. Okay. The garden situation may be different.
Right. If you have something like septoria leaf spot on your tomatoes, it's probably too late to do anything for this year. Your fungicides have to be applied basically before symptoms appear or at the very first sign of symptoms. So at this point, it may be too late, but you can get ready for next year in that When the plants die, you want to go out there and pull them up or dig them up and then remove them from the area and destroy them. And then make a mental note where they were planted and then plant everything in a different location the following spring.
Okay. We'll go to the phones now. You're listening to Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. Derek in Iowa City. Derek, hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Sorry.
You may want to turn down whatever there that's interfering.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Okay, my bad. I have a peach tree that has continued over the last 2 years to have dead limbs or branches, and then it has little bulbs of sap, I guess, coming off the sides of it, and I'm just trying to see if there's anything I can do to save it.
Well, peach trees, to begin with, are not well-suited to Iowa. They have some problems, mainly cold hardiness. The other thing is they require a well-drained soil. They do not like wet, poorly drained sites. So two things may be occurring, especially the last 2 years. We've had some very wet weather. That could be a problem. And we've also had two very cold winters in a row. So there could be a root problem. There could be a cold hardiness issue. When we plant peaches in Iowa, we should do so with the realization they're short-lived, and they might survive for maybe 10 or 15 years, but beyond that, probably not. So they're kind of short-lived. If there's a lot of dieback in the tree, I would assume it's probably not going to be around much longer. If there are a few dead limbs, I would prune those out. But as far as those globs of sap, those form when you have any type of injury. It doesn't have to be the peach tree borer. It might be some other injury. It could be cold injury, whatever. But they'll form whenever they suffer any type of injury. So it doesn't really pinpoint exactly why they're there.
Okay. All right. Well, I appreciate it.
Well, thanks for calling, Derek. Bye-bye now. We'll go next to Dave in Wayne County. Dave, welcome to Horticulture Day.
Thank you very much. Well, first of all, I want to make an observation. I was in Urbandale last night, and I saw a Japanese beetle on some hazelnut bushes. And that's the first time I've seen Japanese beetles in Polk County, so I was concerned about that. And I know they're coming, but I think they're here now. Secondly, I have some rose bushes. And they're the Floribunda type. They're very healthy, except that they seem to have a lot of little white spots developing on the leaves, and then later those white spots become holes in the leaves. And I've been treating those with a systemic fungicide, insecticide, and doesn't seem to be doing any good. I'm wondering what the problem is.
I'm not sure offhand. Japanese beetles do love roses, but they would typically chew holes right through the leaf and leave the veins so you have more of a window pane appearance. But they do love roses. Sometimes you'll see powdery mildew on roses, but that doesn't sound like powdery mildew to me. So
these are little tiny white spots. And the Japanese beetle I saw on hazelnuts, not on the roses.
Well, but they'll definitely go after roses if they're in the area.
Know.
So,
yes.
I don't know exactly what you're seeing. You could always send a sample to the Plant Diagnostic Clinic here at Iowa State and see if they can diagnose it. But offhand, I don't know.
Okay. Have Japanese beetles been seen in Polk County before?
Yes, they have been.
Okay.
They've been around for a few years.
Okay. Well, it was not as new as I thought it was. I hadn't seen them before. So thank you very much.
Thanks, Dave. We appreciate the call. Bye-bye. Bye. We'll go next to Ray in Mason City. Ray, welcome to the program. You called in at 1-866-780-9100, or others can email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Ray, what's your question?
My father's house, I found a plant that I didn't know what it was, and I took it down to the extension, and they said it's Solomon's seal.
Okay.
What would be the best way to try to transplant that? From what I read about it, it's a good one for hummingbirds.
Well, I'm not sure about that. As far as the hummingbirds, it blooms in the spring. The flowers are kind of greenish white, and they hang down from the stalk. So, I'm not sure about that aspect of Solomon's seal. It grows from a thick root-like rhizome. And you could probably dig that up and transplant it either this fall or very early next spring. Now, Solomon's seal is native to Iowa, and it's typically found in woodland areas. Now, when you plant that in the landscape, it comes up from seed very freely. And when you plant that and you have these seedlings coming up throughout the yard, they may become somewhat annoying. So be aware of that, because they do go to seed very freely, and some people then soon regard them as kind of weeds. So just be aware of that fact.
Well, at first I thought they were a weed, but the one I took in had some, looked like berries on them.
Oh, they do. They flower in the spring, and then they form these marble-sized fruit. They're perfectly round. They turn kind of a dark blue to black. And then the critters eat them, like the coons and things. And then they deposit the seed in various locations. That's how they get around. So, and they do a very good job coming up from seed.
Well, that'd probably be the best thing way to try to transplant a few is from those when they're ripe.
Oh, I would just dig up a small little plant. They're fairly easy to transplant. In fact, they're kind of hard to kill once they're established. So they're not hard to transplant too much.
Thanks, Ray.
Thank you.
Just make sure you put them in an area where you can control them, Ray.
I think they're great in a natural area where they can kind of do their thing. But in a well-maintained landscape, you might have second thoughts.
Yes.
Mm. Okay, that's good to know. We have an email, very brief email from Roy in Rolfe, Iowa. He wants to know why Iowa's soil is black. Does anybody have an answer to that?
I'm not a soil scientist.
Okay.
I'm assuming that's because of the organic matter in the soil that gives it that black color.
Okay. I mean, the other soils in the country, like for instance, down south, they're reddish. And
I think that's because of different, maybe iron or some other compound present in the soil.
And also you're looking at, this is glacial till in this area where the glaciers actually came down, and that had a big impact on soil. Then also you got to put some kudos to the prairie. Mm-hmm. We were probably 80%, 85% of the state was covered with prairie, which those root systems can go a couple feet in the soil, and that organic matter really had a good impact on the soil quality.
Okay. Well, we're going to take a brief break here for Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. It'll be very short. When we come back, Extension Horticulturist Richard Giron and DNR Forester Mark Vitosh will be here to answer your questions. Call in at 1-866-780-9100 or email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We'll be back in just a moment. This is Talk of Iowa Horticulture Day. I'm Julie Englander. Joining me today, Extension Horticulturist Richard Giron and DNR Forester Mark Vitosh, taking your questions about the trees and other plants in your life. 1-866-780-9100 or email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we'll go to Julia in Union County. Julia, welcome to the program. What's your question?
Thank you. I'm panicking. My tomatoes are getting that weird, wilting that starts from the bottom and goes up. I thought I did everything right. I cleaned out all my old debris. I haven't had tomatoes in this part, in this area for, 2 years. And the only thing that I didn't clean was my cages. I didn't bleach them. I thought, if I leave them outside, they'll be fine and that won't, they won't get that wilt. I didn't get this wilt until the end of the year, like late August last year, and by then my tomato plants are pretty much, gone. Anyway, and I'm just wondering how do I head this off?
Well, as far as tomatoes are concerned, you have two main types of diseases. You have those blights, which affect the foliage, and you typically see spotting of the foliage, kind of a light brown or tan spotting of the foliage. They may then turn yellow and then eventually turn brown.
Right, that's it.
And they start on the bottom, and they gradually work up. Okay, so you have those. And then you have the wilts, which caused the plant to wilt as if it wasn't getting enough water and eventually die.
Okay, this is a blight.
Blights do get around, and if you have it at this point, it's probably too late to do anything.
Okay.
Hopefully, the plants will go ahead and produce some fruit before they die completely. So it shouldn't be a lost cause completely. When the plants die, I would pull them up or dig them up and destroy them, get them out of the garden and destroy them, and then look for a new site next spring where they haven't been grown for hopefully 3 years, and try again. The weather this year has been very favorable for these leaf-type diseases. They've done very, very well. And they do get around. They get around, for example, let's say you go from one area to the next on mud on your shoes, for example.
Oh, okay.
Or possibly on your tiller or hoe or shovel. So they get around. So you want to be careful about that. But the weather this year has been very, very favorable.
Well, I usually can when at the end of the year I could kind of keep ahead of it, because as I notice the leaves starting to blight, I would take them off.
Right, you can do that.
So I've got about a foot of tomato that doesn't have any leaves on it, and then the top of the plant would grow fast enough that I would get fruit out of it. There's really nothing I can spray on it or anything like that.
Probably not at this point. You have the leaves that you can see the symptoms on, and then you probably have some leaves above that that are infected, but they're not showing symptoms yet.
Okay.
And then above that, you may have some nice, healthy leaves. But I think it's so well established at this point, it's probably too late. There are a number of fungicides that you can use. Most garden centers will have something that you can use.
Okay.
The typical product contains chlorothalonil. That's the active ingredient.
Chlorothalonil.
Okay. And there are various trade names like Daconil, Funginil. Ortho has a similar product, so they're widely sold. But you typically have to start using them early on, either before you see symptoms or at the very first sign.
Okay.
For example, you may have started maybe in early to mid-June, before you had really even seen any symptoms.
Okay.
Thanks, Julia. Good luck. We appreciate the call. Bye-bye now. We'll go next to Mark in Ames. Mark, welcome to Horticulture Day. What's your question?
Good morning. I just had a question on controlling what I believe is either cabbage worm or cabbage looper on my Brussels sprouts, and then also if they could also be causing the severe damage that I'm seeing to my rhubarb leaves. They're getting completely stripped down to the veins, just kind of like what I'm seeing on my Brussels sprouts.
No, I think they're probably different things. As far as controlling these on the cabbage-type crops, I would go to the garden center and look for a BT product. That's
okay.
A bacterium that destroys foliage-feeding caterpillars. And there are various trade names like Diapel or Thuricide, and they should work fine.
Alrighty.
You could also use a typical garden insecticide if you prefer, but a BT typically works quite nicely.
Okay.
As far as the rhubarb, I'm not sure what that would be offhand. I guess I would check the foliage periodically during the day and see if you can find some type of beetle or caterpillar on the rhubarb foliage. I'm not too worried about the rhubarb. That's a pretty tough plant.
Yeah.
And they can tolerate some insect feeding quite well.
They haven't, I've had it the last couple of years. They haven't, hurt the plant, but I've got probably about half the leaves completely stripped, and they are good at hiding. I haven't been able to find them.
Go out in the evening, too, let's say around 8 to 8:30. There are things like slugs and certain cutworms that feed at night.
Okay.
And so if you went out during the day, you'd never see them.
Sure. Okay. Great. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Mark. Bye-bye. We'll go next to Jeff, who's on Interstate 35. Jeff, what's your question?
Hey, good morning, everybody.
Hello.
My question is regarding a couple of patio tomato plants. One is a Super Sweet 100, and the other one, I'm not sure. It's produced just a ton of fruit, about the size of a tennis ball. The one with the larger fruit has been showing some signs of severe stress. You mentioned some plants looking like they need water, but they don't.
Mm-hmm.
That certainly is the case here. And it looks like all the foliage, even though the fruit is turning ripe, it looks like the foliage has just about had it. That was a purchase plant that was planted back in January in a greenhouse. Our Super Sweet 100, which is also in a pot that's about 3 feet away from it, is starting to kind of show the same signs as that. Of course, I Googled it, and I came up with verticillium something or other, a soil-borne disease or a virus. It sounds from what you're talking to previous callers about that it's probably too late to do anything to either plant, but is that probably the case? And can one plant catch it from another when they're not in the same dirt?
Well, these are probably growing in potting soil, and so
correct.
There shouldn't be any soil in them at all. So I'm not sure where the disease would come from. Possibly the greenhouse where they were grown, I don't know.
And they did come from two different sources, too. They were, two different sources they came from.
Well, you wouldn't think it would be verticillium wilt or fusarium wilt. They're present in the soil. They shouldn't be present in the potting mix, you wouldn't think. So that shouldn't be the case. So I'm not sure exactly what's occurring. But if the plants are of visibly wilting and appear to be dying, there definitely is something either affecting the root system or vascular tissue, which is preventing water from moving from the roots to the actual foliage. And if that's the case, you probably can't do anything at this point. That is probably a kind of a lost cause. Hopefully some of the fruit will go ahead and ripen, and if they do, great. But I don't think you can do anything to save the plants, per se.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't see any critters on it at all. I meant in my reading also read about some thrips, and I didn't see that as being an issue at all. I didn't find anything there.
No, sometimes when we have things growing in the garden, again in the ground, we'll see a stalk borer, which is an insect that basically gets inside the stem and feeds inside the stem and eventually does block the flow of water from the roots to the foliage, and that will cause the plant to wilt too. But that's typically when we're growing plants in the ground. That shouldn't be a problem as far as a plant growing in a container.
Good luck, Jeff.
Oh, okay. Well, one other quick thing. You mentioned about destroying them. Is compost sufficient, or should they go in the trash and not go into my compost system?
Well, you might want to put them in the yard waste if you have a city collection service. As far as your home compost pile, oftentimes the temperatures don't get warm enough to actually kill any plant pathogens, so you might want to put them in the yard waste as far as collection.
Okay. All right. Very good
question.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Jeff. We appreciate it. Bye-bye. Well, we're going to take about a five-minute break, but when we return on Horticulture Day, Extension Horticulturist Richard Duran and DNR Forester Mark Vitosh will be here to take your questions about the plants in your life. Call in at 1-866-780-9100, or you can email us talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We'll be back in 5 moments. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Horticulture Day. I'm Julie Englander. Extension Horticulturist Richard Duran and Department of Natural Resources Forester Mark Vitosh are here to answer your questions about trees and other plants you want to grow or grow better. You can call in at 1-866-780-9100 or email us talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we'll go right to the phones to Jim in West Branch. Jim, thanks for waiting. What's your question?
Good morning. I have quite a few yews across the front of the house, and we've had them for many years. They've always been healthy, and then over the winter, this past winter and into the early spring, they dropped most of their needles or their leaves, and I was thinking I'd probably have to dig them out, but it seems like they're starting to come back, and I'm just wondering if you're familiar with the problem that may be affecting those.
I'm not sure offhand what may have affected those. I know rabbits were a major problem this past winter, and I would maybe check to see if they may be damaged the base of some of those branches, in effect girdling them, causing them to die, because they will die if they're girdled. And this past winter, rabbits were feeding on various plants, including yews. So I would check that out. The nice thing about yews is most evergreens don't have the ability to generate new growth from bare branches, but yews do. So in that regard, if they were damaged, if branches were destroyed, they will typically start to produce new growth from the base of the plant. They have that ability, so they can do that. They can recover. A juniper, arborvitae, they can't do that. So apparently something destroyed the branches, and now they're trying to generate new growth. The only other thing that we worry about with yews is they don't like wet soils. Wet, poorly drained soils can lead to a root rot, and you can have a general decline or very rapid death if they get a root rot, but that typically destroys the entire plant. Nothing comes back. So
it'll be more uniform too, Jim. That yellowing and that browning would be uniform throughout, whereas with the rabbit damage, you can actually reach down and feel on the usually on the top side of those lower branches where the snow piled up. They got basically, as the snow melts, they eat that bark right off, and you can actually physically see where that bark's removed. If you don't see that, then you may be looking at the moisture problem that Richard was talking about.
Okay, just thanks. That's great. One quick question. I haven't seen too many rabbits, but there is a couple deer that have been in the area. Would that have anything to do with it?
They won't usually eat the bark off too much. It's usually rabbits or mice or even voles that will do more bark damage. The deer will eat the foliage, but they typically aren't going to strip the bark off in most cases. There are exceptions in really bad winters, but in general, they won't. You can actually, I've seen a lot of rabbit mouse damage. You can physically almost see the chew marks along the bark or the branch.
Great. Thanks very much.
Thanks for calling. Bye-bye. We have an email from Carolyn in Iowa City. She says a large branch from an old maple tree fell on her pagoda dogwood during a recent storm. It broke the top of the dogwood and some of its branches. Will the dogwood survive with a raw top trunk? And is there a proper way to prune it to make it more likely to survive?
Well, what I would tell Carolyn is any branches that are broken or severely damaged is to prune them back to the branch collar. And there's a good Iowa State publication on pruning trees and shrubs that show where that is. And then basically what she has left is what she has left. So she'll have to work with that. And, you know, I would say if over 50% of the tree is still left, she could probably work with it. And with Pagoda dogwood, it's a smaller tree, even if it's a little less and she really likes it, she can give it a couple years and see if it fills out a little bit. But as long as the main structure of the trunk is there and there's not a huge open wound and it didn't strip down the tree, if she's got some structure left, I would prune it back to those good branches and then give it some time and see what happens.
Okay, sounds good. We'll go to Charles now in Long Grove. Charles, welcome to the program. What's your question?
Several years ago, I planted about an acre to prairie grass, and 2 years ago, I finally reached an area where it was so tall, I realized then what they were talking about when they said that it was sometimes shoulder high to a man on horseback.
Wow.
And the following year, which had been last year, it was not like that at all. It had started down, and then someone told me when you've had a full crop like that, then you should burn it back. This spring, I burn it all off, and now this year it looks like I have mostly foxtail, bluegrass, and an awful lot of ragweed. What happened, and how should you take care of this to rejuvenate it?
Well, I'm not sure what happened. Once you get those plants established, they're basically permanent residents. They take care of themselves. So if you have mainly weeds at this point, you may have to redo that possibly. Prairies are burned periodically. Doesn't have to be done every year. And if you have a situation where burning is not possible, you don't have to burn. You can just cut the debris down in late winter. That's okay. But I guess I would have someone maybe come out and look at the site and see how many weeds you have. And if it's mainly weeds, you may have to possibly redo that. It usually takes about 2 or 3 years when you go out and sow native grass and wildflowers. It typically takes those 2 or 3 years to get fully established. And once they do, they kind of take care of themselves for the most part.
Charles, I would suggest that you call the Scott County Soil and Water Conservation District office. They're over by the Flying J truck stop off of I-80 there near the Quad Cities.
Okay.
And just give them a call. They don't necessarily always do a lot of service calls, but they have a number of technicians, and if they're out and about someday, ask them if they could possibly stop by and take a quick walk in your prairie just to – most of those folks are really good at identifying plants and stuff, so they could possibly just take a quick look, see what plants you have there. I'm not guaranteeing they can do it, but sometimes they might have a few minutes where they can just take a quick look and kind of evaluate it and see what's left for you.
I appreciate that.
Good luck, Charles.
Thank you very much.
We hope it comes back for you. Thanks for calling. Bye-bye.
Bye.
We'll go next to Sharon in Johnston. Sharon, welcome to the program. What's your question?
Well, last year I had this infestation of Japanese beetles on two crabapple trees, and it was suggested to do a soil wash with a Bayer product, which I did this spring, and it's working wonderfully. But now the little buggers are in my birch trees, and I was wondering if I put that on now, would that, and I realize it takes about a month, but would that give the birch trees some relief this year?
Richard can maybe argue with me, but to me, I think you're getting kind of late, and you're probably better off to treat next spring on those again.
Okay.
The good news is they are going to cause damage. I've noticed damage in this area, and I'm sure Richard has over in his area too, but to me, it's probably starting to wind down a little bit. They really get aggressive for a while, but they don't feed for months and months and months. It's they feed for a number of weeks, and then things kind of, they do their damage and things kind of slow down. So that birch can take some defoliation. If it happens every year, then you could start to have some problems. But 1 year of defoliation most likely shouldn't kill that tree. So personally, I think you're going to get better effectiveness if you waited and treated next spring. What do you think, Richard?
I agree. Typically, you have to apply this at least 4 to 6 weeks before they appear. And they're already here, so I don't think it's going to work very well.
Okay, well, I thought I'd give it a try.
It should be okay. Hang in there. It's going to just get used to not looking so good, but, you know, it'll leaf out next spring, and you shouldn't really notice any major damage until it starts again next year.
Well, it's two clumps of them, and they're in both clumps. So.
Yeah, that's the bottom line is, though, they're not going to look great the rest of the summer, but they're going to be okay. That's the bottom line.
Okay.
Thanks, Sharon.
Thank you.
Bye-bye now.
Bye.
We'll go next to Dirk in Missouri. Dirk, welcome to the program.
Yes, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I live outside of Ottumwa. I'm currently working in Missouri, road construction. Real quick, I'm wanting to start some fruit trees. I want to know how to start the fruit trees, how to keep them healthy. I will listen to the answers off the air. Thank you very much.
Thanks for calling, Dirk. We appreciate it.
Well, you typically buy plants at a local nursery. And as far as fruit trees, we can grow a number of fruit trees, apples, pears, the tart cherries or pie cherries. Now, with the pie cherries, they're self-fruitful. You only need one tree. With the apples and pears, they're basically not self-fruitful. You have to plant two different varieties of each pears and apples on those. As far as planting them, just make sure you plant those in a well-drained soil. Fruit trees do not like wet, poorly drained sites, and make sure they have plenty of sun.
Richard, do you guys have a list of some of those that do well in Iowa through the local extension?
Right. In fact, if they have a computer, if they have internet access, they can go on to the internet. For example, go to www.iowa.com iastate.edu, and that's the homepage for Iowa State. And there's a search box in the upper right-hand corner. Type in Fruit Cultivars for Iowa. That's the name of a publication, and that will list the apples, pears, cherries, strawberries, raspberries, etc., that will grow in Iowa.
Okay, that's good information. We've got an email from Robin in Hampton, Iowa, Franklin County. Asks, I recently had two large locust trees that were too close to my house removed. Will the roots continue to send up suckers, or will the roots eventually die?
Well, they'll probably continue to put up suckers depending on which variety. Both honey locusts, these are probably honey locusts, mm-hmm. black locusts, both will sprout. So if she really doesn't want sprouts, she should let those sprouts come back up, nip them down to the ground, and then put a little bit of Roundup on there if she doesn't want them to come back to actually kill the root system. But most of the time, locusts will resprout.
Okay. She says the guys who cut down the tree said they found a very large nest of giant ants in one of the trees and suggested I be careful. Is there anything I should do to prevent the ants from invading the house or the tree?
Yeah. It was probably in a hollow spot. Those are carpenter ants. So she's best to treat. You can get different dust and stuff that you can put in those areas so they're not nesting and moving into the house. So, yeah, I would treat that nest area with the carpenter ants.
Okay. We'll go to Stace in Lorville. I'm not sure if that's if I'm pronouncing that correctly. Hello?
Okay,
Stace.
Yes, hello. And my name is Stace from
Lorville.
Okay,
it is Lorville. Okay. Where is that?
That is over on 175.
Okay.
Lorville, Lake City, Rockwell City area.
All right. Well, thanks for calling in. What's your question, Stace?
Okay, my question is, I have a purple smoke tree I put in about 3 years ago, and it grew vigorously. It's probably about 7 to 8 feet tall, and I've never had smoke on it, but I've enjoyed the leaves, and it's a very nice-looking tree. But this year, the old growth from last year is all dead, and new growth has come out from the bottom. And so, obviously, it's not dead, but I wonder what I should do about this purple smoke tree.
You think that's winter damage, Richard, maybe?
That would be my guess, that winter damage. That happens on occasion, and we had a cold winter this past year, so they will do that on occasion. So I would just cut out the dead wood if the entire stem is dead, back to the ground if necessary. But they will do that on occasion when we have a really cold winter.
Well, we were in that area that had huge ice damage. And so I just wondered if I should take the whole thing out and start over again, or if I could cut it back and then just let it go and do its thing.
Well, if the new shoots are coming up and look real nice and healthy, I would just keep those.
Because I think you could continue, even if you plant a new one, if we have similar winters. I think smoke tree is it a little on the edge, Richard?
Kind of marginally hardy in central and northern Iowa, yes, it
so,
is.
So I would... Again, you could plant a brand new one and have the same thing happen again. So you're probably better off to just keep working with this one and realize that you may get some kill back from year to year. And as long as it comes back enough that it can be somewhat enjoyable, you're probably better off doing that instead of keep trying to plant a new one when you're going to probably have the same type of problem.
Now, if it dies back periodically, it may not get mature enough, old enough to actually flower. So you may have to just enjoy the actual foliage.
Well, it is pretty an interesting foliage, and it takes on an mm-hmm. interesting shape, too.
Right.
So I'll just hope for the best.
Good luck, Stace. We appreciate the call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye now. We'll go next to Spence in Davenport. Spence, welcome to Horticulture Day. What's your question?
Yes, I follow up on my mesquite trees. They're prospering all right, but the trunks are not developing. They're not self-supporting. I have to prop up this tree. And I'm wondering if it's because it's the lights are on in this whole hallway where it is 24 hours. Of course, it's right in front of a window, so it gets full sun part of the day.
So you have a mesquite tree. They don't necessarily grow here. You're talking about something that's in your home.
It's in our retirement village.
Right, it's a tree from the southwest, I think,
yeah,
the country.
It's probably not getting enough light, and therefore it's just not very... sturdy or strong,
okay.
And so you may have to permanently keep it supported.
Okay,
that's okay,
well,
but by itself, it may not be able to stand up by itself. So,
I got two trees together. You suppose I should maybe cut one of them down, and they're in a pot.
Okay. Well, if you think they're being crowded, and maybe one is maybe not nearly as healthy or vigorous, you might want to remove that one and leave the bigger plant.
So I guess propping them up and maybe taking a look at which is the strongest plant.
And giving it as much sunlight as you can.
That's
right,
the key.
There
in the windows.
Yeah.
But it's done most of the day.
Right. But during the winter months, when the days are short, they just don't get much light indoors. So that's the main problem, I think.
Thanks, Spence. Good luck with your mesquite tree.
One more thing. I got a tomato plant that somebody was discarding because they said he had fungus in the soil and it destroyed the tomato. Is that soil recyclable, or should I throw this in the dumpster?
The soil?
I take the soil out and spread it out so that the nature takes its course and cleans it up.
I think what I would probably do with that is if you have a garden area outside, maybe just put it out there. Kind of incorporate it into the existing soil in a flower bed or someplace like that.
Okay, and that would kill the fungus.
It probably won't affect other plants, let's say petunias or marigolds. They probably shouldn't be affected.
Yeah, I've got some herbs and parsley and that sort of thing.
Thanks, Spence. Good luck.
Thank you very much. My pleasure.
Bye. Bye-bye now. We appreciate the call. You're listening to Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. The number to call, 1-866-780-9100, or you can email us at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we have an email from Denny in Mitchellville. I have pin oaks with some dead limbs and some that are green but too low. Can I trim them at this time?
No.
Okay. No oak trimming.
Well, no oak trimming at all this time of year. Even with dead ones, there is that potential you could skin up the tree or get into some live branches. So he's better off. I would wait till late October, November, or even wait till we get good frost. Things are dormant, and then do your pruning then. But this time of year, there's just too much risk. And there is quite a bit of oak wilt out there, so I would not prune it this time.
Okay. We'll go to Kathy in Osceola. Kathy, welcome to Horticulture Day. What's your question?
Oh, I have a couple of Kim lilac shrubs that I've had for about 7 years. And last year I cut them back like right after they had bloomed, you know. And then this year I didn't get any blooms at all, and I just wondered what I did wrong. When I should be, you know, doing the pruning. I thought I was supposed to do it right after they had bloomed.
Right. Typically, you want to prune them within a few weeks of bloom, let's say like within 2 to 4 weeks, because they start to form flower buds by typically early to mid-summer. And so if you prune them any time, let's say late July, August, September, you're going to be removing those flower buds. And so it should be done within 2 to 4 weeks. If you did so, I'm not sure why it didn't form flower buds, because that should have given it enough time to grow back and actually form flower buds. So, don't know. If you haven't done anything to them this year, they definitely should bloom next spring.
Okay, so I shouldn't even bother. I mean, even though the greenery has grown, I'll just leave it and see if I get buds next year.
Right. It's too late to prune this year. Too late definitely for this year. So I would just leave it. And it really should bloom next year. The only reason would be if it's not getting enough sun, possibly.
Okay.
But that shouldn't change that quickly within a couple of years. But they do need about 6 hours of sun or more.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks for calling, Kathy. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
We'll go next to Calvin in Cedar Rapids. Calvin, welcome to the program.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just had a question. I've been getting in and around the house quite a bit of what I think are called earwigs, and I was just curious how I can keep those out of the house, and is there something in the yard that is attracting them, or what's going on with that?
Well, I'm not an entomologist, but the earwigs have done quite well the last few years because the weather has been favorable. We've had 2 or 3 years of above normal rainfall, and for that reason, they've done very, very well. They basically feed on decaying organic matter, They will also feed on actually living plants, too, so they can damage some plants. They really don't cause any harm to us, per se. Sure. They won't really bite us. They won't damage the house, but they will wander indoors on occasion. Mm-hmm. And so when they do, we typically dispose of them when they wander inside. If we don't do anything, they'll typically usually die inside the house because it's too dry for them in many cases. There are insecticides, but I don't think they're that effective. You could try maybe spraying them around the house foundation, and that might help a little bit. But I think they're going to wander inside on occasion. If you could find where they're actually coming in and have those areas caulked or sealed, that would prevent them from coming inside.
Thanks, Kelvin, and thanks everybody who called in today. Horticulture Day returns next week at this time, and that day you'll hear a new voice as we welcome Iowa Public Radio's new Talk of Iowa host, Charity Nebbe. I've enjoyed sitting in for a spell and hope you enjoy and join Charity each Friday for Horticulture Day and throughout the week for Talk of Iowa. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese. We had technical assistance by Lindsay Moon. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. Thanks to horticulturist Richard Giron and DNR forester Mark Vittosh. I'm Julie Englander. Thanks for joining us.